Again, happy Earth Day to you. Larry Mueller here, and on this Earth Day, we're going to be talking with Dennis Boyer. To begin our program, Dennis has been with us many times. He's written a number of books, and the book that we're latest book that we're going to be talking with him about today is called Listen to the Land, Conservation Conversations. You know, that's a hard one to say, Dennis.
It is a tongue twister.
It is a little bit of a tongue twister. Anyway, we'll get some perspectives on the environment and our relationship to the land as we visit with him, and you certainly will too when you read his book, Listen to the Land. It's published by the University of by Terrace Books, a University of Wisconsin Press. And good grief, how many books have you written, Dennis?
I think it's 10. I think this is the 10th.
This is the 10th. I'll tell you what, it's a great book. Jerry Apps, as a matter of fact, had a very nice piece of comments about your book. He said, I've seen no other work that resembles Listen to the Land and includes diverse perspectives on the environment, sense of place, the power of nature, and relationship to the land. And it belongs on the shelf next to Gaylord Nelson, Aldo Leopold, John Muir, and Henry David Thoreau. You're traveling in pretty good company there.
He bowled me over with that one. And it's quite a compliment coming from the guy I consider the dean of regional writers, Jerry.
He's a great guy. Well, here's let me give the number for people to call in. If you have a question or comment on this Earth Day, maybe you've got something to say about our land and our environment. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call or send us an email, and we'll be glad to get you on the air. And I tell you what, I picked your book up, and I didn't read your foreword, which is always a mistake. And, you know, and I just started and opened it up, and started reading. I thought, these aren't necessarily Dennis's thoughts. They're other people's thoughts, but I didn't see names connected with it. And then I had to go back and look and see what you had to say in your foreword. It's a really different kind of approach that you've taken. Tell us about what that approach is and why you took it.
Well, when people ask me how I would characterize this, I call it in adult contemporary folklore. And the reason I do that, I think our heroes, if we pay attention, are living among us. And I think there can be a mythic quality to anybody who approaches life with authenticity and zeal. And the people who are provide the basis of these stories, I guess, did that for me. Every story in here is based on someone, but I guess in a way you could call it an archetype that I've allowed their mythic side to come out.
Well, it's a great way to do it.
I enjoyed it, and I think it takes the stories away from personality issues too, because you know the minute you get into, well, this is so and so, and here are the credentials, mm-hmm. then people can get preoccupied with the controversies that person might have been involved in, or other issues. So this takes us past that type of material.
Well, one of the names that did stand out to me was Walt Brissett, who I had many great conversations with on this program, and you dedicate your book to Walt.
Yes, and I guess I wouldn't be giving too much away to anyone who would read it would find that Walt's in here quite a bit, too.
Yeah.
He was a very good friend that he's greatly missed. It's 10 years since he's gone.
Yeah, it's a long time. He's a wonderful guy. Well, how did you – you have a – it's a pretty eclectic in a way. I mean, there's a theme that kind of ties the book together, but maybe you can talk about the themes in your book, the kinds of things you cover, and then maybe talk about how you selected people for it too.
Well, I try to cover the waterfront in a sense of different perspectives on the outdoors, people who work outside, live on the land, work in the woods. People who are involved in urban renewal. The whole point of it was to show that there's a multitude of perspectives on these things. And I think what happens often in environmental politics, and often that's how the environment is portrayed as a political issue. I try to take it beyond the politics here. And so I'm trying to say No one group, no one person speaks for our attitudes on the land. And I have to be mindful of that myself. I've been a green activist, and I have to keep reminding myself there are lots of different takes on these issues. Let's appeal to common values, and this is an exploration of those values.
It's interesting, and the people that you selected, without knowing who the people were, this is probably based on a long time effort on your part, people that you've come in contact with over many years.
It's about 30 years, roughly, about 30 years of listening to folks. And those people who are in the collection, I could have had easily hundreds of more, but the publishers don't like that. The people who did end up in here, or at least the stories that ended up here, are the ones that touched me probably the most deeply.
And I'm trying to give people a sense for what is in here. I mean, you talk with a guy who fishes, and people who have hunted, and you talk with a land manager, or a city manager type, at least, from Madison. I kind of guessed on who that might have been. And you talk with a veterinarian.
Mm-hmm. Game wardens, loggers, a couple of farmers, a lot of tribal activists,
and so you really do get a different take from so many different people.
Yes, I've had people who looked at this. They thought perhaps the most unusual one was a land perspective from someone doing a life sentence in a state correctional facility.
You know, I haven't read that one. I haven't read that one yet. What? Tell us about that.
Well, I think as we have more and more of our population incarcerated, and there's lots of issues can be raised about that, it does put people in a different relationship to their relationship with the land. And I found it interesting to have contact with prisoners, and especially ones who had prior feelings. And in this case, it was someone with roots in the rural South, an African American. Mm-hmm. And it had a profound impact on him to be out of touch with those things. It was probably the most serious part of his reaction to incarceration. And in a psychological way that affected him deeply, but also drew him into some, you might say, some inner resources that he could, in a sense, develop an out-of-body experience with nature, to leave the confines of those four walls, and through reminiscences and in essentially a form of spiritual work, find himself again outside.
Oh,
and
man.
Explore the world.
Dennis Boyer, our guest today, as we talk with him about his new book, Listen to the Land, Conservation Conversations. It's published by the University of Wisconsin Press, Terrace Books, the University of Wisconsin Press. If you'd like to join in with your own question or comment or thoughts on this Earth Day, we'd welcome them at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. One of the favorite stories that you told in the book that I enjoyed a lot was Grandpop's treehouse.
Yes. I think it does us well to think about, as we pass on these things, the effect of intergenerational transmission. And in this case, you can develop a whole relationship with nature based on a grandparent or an uncle or someone who's introduced you to the outdoors and who roots you in traditions that are even longer standing back through time.
Yeah, I enjoyed the there was a little bit of sadness in that too. The treehouse was there, but you knew it was going to be gone.
Yeah, that's it. Things change, and that's almost inevitable. But staying rooted in those things, even as they do change, I think strengthens people as well.
And one of the things I liked about that. And as I read the other stories too, or many of the other stories, I haven't finished all of them, but I've read quite a few. That they're just sort of they're a lot of these are just sort of everyday people, you know, who are out there doing their living their life, doing their work, but they're really deep and in some ways heroic.
Yeah, that's I think that is a big part of it. They have they're heroic in the sense that they live with some zest and they've thought deeply about these matters.
Yeah. Well, let's take some calls. Again, if you'd like to join us, the number 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Now, let's go to Susan in Portage County. Hi, Susan. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have in my hand a book called Listen to the Land, copyrighted in 1977. And I'm wondering if yours is a sequel to it. Are you aware of this particular book?
No, I'm sorry to say I've never heard of it before.
It was printed out of Farm Journal Incorporated. That's where its copyright is from. And it is interesting, as I'm sure yours is too, with similar stories, general topics, a good life as well as a good living, the beginning years, love and marriage, children, the striving years, how does a young wife manage family and farm, the rewarding years, on and on. But it's these are all anecdotal stories written by different authors and compiled. So you might want to
check that out. Well, check it out. Yeah. Well, it's that's a rare event, I suppose, that you'll find another book with exactly the same title.
It happens from time to time, especially as things go out of print, and sometimes you can do a search and turn up nothing, but there can still be something out there.
Now, that the book that Susan's talking about is about, sounds to me like it's a story of farming and agriculture maybe the seasons and the life of agriculture, or the life of farming. And certainly you touch on farming and rural life in your book as well.
Fairly extensively. I'd say, probably about a quarter of the stories have some relationship like that, not always conventional farmers. In fact, some of my rural sources are fairly offbeat and unconventional, but some farm activists as well.
Yeah, I remember one of the stories involved a farming from the 1980s, which was a really tough time.
Nasty time.
A nasty time for farmers. And when you said activists, that was the mind that came immediately to my mind. The fellow that you talked with about farming during that period.
Yes, a time of foreclosures, huge stress on families, even issues of suicide, conflict. It was not a good time for farming in Wisconsin.
And interesting to read about it again in Dennis Boyer's book, Listen to the Land. Larry Mueller here, Jim Packard, our producer on this, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this Earth Day, we're getting some perspectives on the environment and on our relationship to the land with Dennis Boyer, who's authored Listen to the Land, Conservation Conversations, published by Terrace Books at the University of Wisconsin Press. Glad to have him with us on this Earth Day and certainly looking forward to what you have to say on this Earth Day as well. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Renee in Green Bay next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hi, Larry. Hi, Dennis.
Hi.
I thank you for this program. I have a question that may sound pretty simplistic, but in light of all the recalls and the ecology, it's getting kind of scary, this salmonella, everything. What I'm looking for is organic thistle seed, because I think maybe the wave of the future for me might be to grow my own seeds, in jars or whatnot, just in case. Maybe I'm a fatalist. But I was just wondering, do you know where I could find organic thistle seed? I went to the pet stores and they said, no, this is all sprayed.
Well, I can't answer with precision, but a place to start would be with the Seed Savers people in Decorah, Iowa.
Yeah.
They, They should have a website on that, and I do a search on that. They focus mostly on garden crop type varieties, but they are focused on heirlooms, and I guess initially thistle was brought here as a kind of an ornamental.
Yeah, it was, and I think you're right. The Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa, if you put even Seed Saver Exchange, Iowa, it's going to pop up, and I'm pretty sure you're going to find it there, Renee.
Well, thank you so very much.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Happy Larry, year. I wanted to mention there's a story in here about that type of thing.
Talk about that.
Well, I wanted to include somebody who was focused on gardening and focused on it from a heritage perspective. And I think the whole point of the story, as related to me, was there's a lot of our heritage that's represented by those things. It goes back through families, through ethnic groups, and there's a diversity there that's often unappreciated. We've come to a point where often our food is produced on how well it can be shipped, how long it can be stored, and we've lost flavor, we've lost varieties, and I think there are admirable people out there who are trying to preserve this diversity. It's another form of biodiversity that should be valued.
It should be. And thanks again, Renee, for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Alan in Boscobel next. Hi, Alan. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. On this Earth Day, I just want to thank all the farmers for all they do, whether it's a conscious decision they made or it's coincidental. They have to and end up taking care of the land as much as they can, and I just want to thank them for everything. And that's what I want.
All right. Alan, thank you so much. Well, how about a comment from you?
Well, that's a great sentiment. I think farmers stand in a stewardship relationship, and done properly are really adding value for all of us to the land. But that's probably true of other people who log sustainably and do other land pursuits in a responsible way.
It's nice to hear that. Alan, I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And we might get some comments from other people relating to farmers or those other ones that you others that you were talking about as well as we move along here. Politics does kind of rear its head, sometimes maybe for the better, but sometimes works the other way.
Well, those who know me know that I haven't been above the fray in my life. I came out of a lot of activist-style things of peace, justice, ecology, Wisconsin Greens. But I think on some of these issues, we have to look beyond the partisan stuff, and I do feel kind of land issues often get overly partisanized, that sort of gotcha type thing, this fact that if my opponent is for this, I have to be against that. And I think that's a contaminant, and it's taken our conservation issues out of that realm that we used to be in that sort of Roosevelt-Pinchot era where we had some consensus on it. And I'd like to see us work back to that and treat it as a stewardship issue.
Yeah, do you think things have changed really here in Wisconsin that way for the worse or for the...
Incrementally, yes. I don't think it's as bad as examples I've seen elsewhere, but partisanism and partisanship and just the influence of large interests have had bad environmental impacts.
On this Earth Day, is there a particular story in here that you think encapsulates Earth Day?
I think for me it is the very first story in the book about the power of stories. I think that sharing of our stories, to know that it gives us continuity, that stories have powers beyond what we usually think of. You know, there's so many ways to view a story. It relays information. It can be educational. It can be entertaining. But I think there's some transformative elements of stories, too. They can almost heal if they give us some inner peace, give us some sense of connection. And that's what I think our land stories do. They can be very soothing in a deep, deep way. And in that story, the story is told in the Madeline Island Museum. by a fellow who some would say resembles Walt Brissett. And he starts out by introducing people to a general form of environmentalism. And he's speaking to a crowd of almost entirely European Americans. And he gets them kind of nodding along. Walt was great that way. He could find common points. And he takes them through a journey of the Ojibwe people, of how they came to this place, how European Americans came to this place. And in the end, he ended up startling them because he liked to do things that were provocative. And after he had them nodding, and after he had adopted everyone en masse in the room into his tribe, he said, you know, because we're all so good at this, we're good people, we're good environmentalists, we ought to have that radioactive waste disposal site up here somewhere. And people just about went crazy. And then he went back into this. I mean, that's where the first time I heard the phrase, the power of stories, he said, well, you know, that we've created this stuff, someone's got to deal with it, and where better to have it than where there'll be, you know, 10,000 years from now, elders who will say to the children, don't go up on that hill, there's some bad stuff buried up there.
Oh, man, does that ever sound like Walt?
Yes.
Oh, man, I love that story. Well, Dennis, as you, how long did it take you to put this book together, by the way?
Well, like a lot of my books, Larry, I'm putting them together without knowing it sometimes. I'm always collecting material. Sometimes I just don't know what I'm collecting it for. The actual production of the book took, when I formed a germ in my a germ of the idea in my mind, that took maybe 3-4 years, but I guess you could say it was a 30-year endeavor.
There are a lot of – so there are some stories, and there are stories in there that go back a long way.
Yes. In fact, it's sort of organized sequentially from my very first encounter in Wisconsin. I'm not a Wisconsin native. I came here from Pennsylvania about 30 years ago. Uh-huh. And so it's sort of sequential about how I was introduced to different concepts and different approaches.
Was there a single question that you asked of every person? Probably not, because you did this over a long period of time. But
no, there wasn't. I kind of let them tell me. Probably the person who introduced me to the idea or influenced me the most about how I treated it later on when I had the idea of doing it was George Vukelic, formerly of North Country Notebook here on WPR. And he made an effort to make more of a journalist out of me in terms of inquiry, but I certainly didn't have his panache or ability to probe, so I just listened.
Yeah. And George, there's another name that is well brought up on Earth Day.
Yes, yes. I don't think anyone who ever encountered George in the terms of his writings on the land will ever forget it.
No, he was a great guy and was a guest on this program many, many times. And I miss him. Think about him pretty often. I bet you do. You do,
yeah,
as well.
I do too. And that's another reason to have material like this. I don't mean just the ones I've preserved, but stories like that of that type need to be remembered.
As we think about Earth Day, is Earth Day? I remember. I can think back to the earlier Earth Days and the level of excitement around Earth Day. How do you think it's changed over the years?
Well, it has less of the flash, but it in some ways things make more of an impression by becoming enduring. And the fact that we're still talking about it and it's another occasion to bring out these issues, I think that's a good thing. I don't think people have forgotten about environmental issues. I think there's a lot of discussion of them, and at the local level, certainly how we plan our communities, that's a enduring issue. Energy is still a very enduring issue. So it's going to change and transform over time, and each generation will have to pick up a torch again and reinvigorate it. But uh, I've uh, I've had many a happy Earth Day, and they've often been different. And I'm just glad that I'm not spending this Earth Day like I spent the first Earth Day, which was I was in Vietnam.
Oh, no. Yeah, those memories probably are not memories that you enjoy very much. I happen to be right here at the University of Wisconsin for the first Earth Day, and I remember the tremendous excitement around it. Of course, in part because of Gaylord Nelson.
Yes, and I remember reading about it. So it the coverage of it went halfway around the world. Even the Stars and Stripes had a big write up on it.
I wonder if people set aside and, on this Earth Day, we're going to do this relating to the Earth.
Oh, I know people who do that, and I'd say about half the people in this book do exactly that. Sometimes it's simply a meal. Sometimes it's a hike or a walk, or sometimes it's an environmental cleanup. I think a lot of people have some private way of celebrating it like they do other holidays.
You know, that might be kind of fun. Give us a call if you've got something that you've decided to do, maybe on your own or maybe with the spouse or maybe with the kids for this Earth Day. I'd love to hear that. We've got a little bit of time left. We can talk about that. 1-800-642-1234. What are you doing on this Earth Day to kind of call attention to it? And I'd love to hear about it. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Let's take a couple of more chapters from the book and talk about them. And I want to go back to that veterinarian because I kind of enjoyed hearing what he had to say. And describe that chapter for us.
Well, I got to meet a lot of veterinarians when I engaged in draft horse work. Mm-hmm. And I found them to have very interesting perspectives on nature because I discovered among many veterinarians, especially veterinarians close to my age, there was a typical arc they went through, and they were often kind of amateur veterinarians when they were children. They were the type of people who brought the bird inside with a broken wing or nursed the rabbit back to health and things like that. So they had generally a kind of a compassionate attitude, and then coupled usually with living in a rural farm community and knowing the centrality of the health of animals to farm survival.
Yeah.
And so they're people who really kind of thought about those things. And I think a lot of them had to deal with contradiction and paradox because they were dealing not with raw nature, but still part of nature that humans, in essence, had engineered, domesticated animals. And so they had very interesting takes on that, and they're often big advocates for animals as well. So veterinarians as a group always interest me, and I met some crusty old types who really interested me and were vastly entertaining because they've got tons of stories. They've been in people's barns, and when you're in someone's barn, you see personalities revealed. It's a fairly intimate setting in some ways, so you learn a lot about a person by seeing what they do in their barn, and they travel around a lot, often to horse sales, auctions, and things like that, and so they're exposed to different ideas, so they're thinking a little over the horizon too.
Let's take some calls again. Nick in Green Bay, I thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I'm on board with Handy's Tim Allen, but I'll be building some bird houses tonight and throwing them up in the backyard. I know that they're not too pretty, but the birds don't seem to care, so.
All right.
Good for you.
Nick, well, there's a great way to celebrate Earth Day. Build some bird houses with Nick.
That is a good way. I usually celebrate it when I can get the delivery on the proper way. So I often think about not Earth Day, but Earth Week, because I like to plant trees. And out on our farm, I typically plant 1,000 conifers every spring around this time.
So you plant trees. Well, and Nick makes birdhouses. David in Milwaukee, let's go to you now. Hi, David.
Hi. Well, actually, I'm in Holman, Wisconsin, sitting on the banks of the Mississippi River, listening to your show.
Cool.
And every Earth Day, I'm a folk singer, and I go to schools, and I sing songs about the Earth for the kids and teach them about Earth Day. And so I'm doing four shows in Holman, and I happen to be between shows right now. And sitting on the banks of the Mississippi is just a wonderful way to celebrate Earth Day. It's beautiful here.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, what's your favorite song about the Earth?
It's by a man named Tom Paxton called Whose Garden Was This?
Oh, yes.
And it's a fairly serious song. I generally don't do that for the little kids. I do it for older ones. But it reminds us what we have to lose.
Yes, that is important to remember. There's so many good troubadours of the Earth. I think of people like Pete Seeger, Larry Long, Walking Jim Stoltz. So they're great ways to tell stories.
Yeah,
it certainly is.
And Tom Paxton is that's a good song too.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, David, you're doing a good thing. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
And enjoy that Mississippi River. Oh yeah, Britt in Appleton. Let's go to you. Hi, Britt.
Hello.
What are you doing on this Earth Day?
Well, I have a 5-year-old daughter, and I like to take her around the neighborhood and pick up everybody else's trash.
Oh, good for you. And she gets a kick out of it. I have a 5-year-old, too, 5.5-year-old. So.
Yeah, mine's 5.5 going on 21, and she loves picking up other people's trash.
Well, and they're probably elderly people and people who don't get around that well that appreciate it as well.
Yes, and the neighborhood kids who are not quite as responsible.
All right. Well, you're doing a good thing. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate that call. Well, those are nice. You've got something you're doing for this Earth Day? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Well, unlike one of our earlier callers, I didn't build a birdhouse like Nick did, but I did buy a new one. I bought a bird feeder, so I've added another bird feeder to our collection, and I didn't do it today. Actually, I did it on, was it Sunday? Did it on Sunday, so kind of like the first of the week. Put out the bird feeder, and man, we've got birds coming to our feeder. Matter of fact, I should just in passing mention, we'll be talking about birds coming up in a few minutes here on the program and bird songs with a couple of guests. But that's a good way to celebrate Earth Day, too. Take care of those birds.
Yes, it is. I mentioned before, I think, that I saw my first wood duck of the season yesterday.
Yeah, and I haven't seen one yet, but I'm sure we'll get into some conversation about that as we talk with our bird guys a little bit later on here. Well, are you concerned concerned about conservation in this state?
I am. I think it's something that's an ongoing concern. I guess I've reached that stage in my life where I don't believe in flash in the pan things. I think you need to be slow and steady wins the race in so many areas of life. And it's something that we have to pay attention to all the time. There's no one who's going to take care of it for us. We're not going to elect one person who is going to solve it all. It's always going to be there. And we're going to have to look for ways of balance, sustainability. That's why I like the people who work on the things that are going on about sustainability and natural step and finding ways that we can continue this good life we have and keep this for the future. It's kind of an intergenerational justice issue, just like we don't want to leave a kind of wrecked political state or a wrecked economy to our grandchildren and great-grandchildren. We want to make sure that there's a good earth for them, too.
And at the same time, you have to feel good. I know we've certainly got our share of problems, but just reading your pieces and reading about, in most cases or many cases, just kind of ordinary, average people. But when you read what they're doing and how they think about different parts of our environment and our relationship to the land, you can't help but feel kind of hopeful in a way.
Huh? Oh yes, I am hopeful. I'm hopeful, but I'm vigilant too. And you're right. There's so many examples out there of people doing wonderful stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, it's been callers online here, but we're out of time. I want to thank you so much, Dennis, for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. I'm really enjoying your book. I got through quite a bit of it, but I haven't finished it, so I'm hanging on to it.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Do you have any? Are you doing any book signings or any events of that nature?
I don't have any in the immediate future, but I have quite a few over the summer coming up in mostly rural events, Kickapoo Fair, some various food fests and things of that type. But I'll get into that more in the summer and fall.
Any website that we can point to?
Well, the best one for it would be at www.wisc.edu/Wisconsin Press.
All right. And, of course, all of our local bookstores are going to have copies. And if they don't...
I hope so.
If they don't have a copy, they can sure order one in a hurry. Thank you so much, Dennis. Appreciate having you with us again.
And have a great Earth Day, Larry.
To you as well. Thank you. Well, Dennis Boyer is author of many books, 10, as a matter of fact. This is his 10th. It's called Listen to the Land, Conservation Conversations. And as Jerry App said, belongs on the shelf right next to the works of Gaylord Nelson, Aldo Leopold, John Muir, and Henry David Thoreau. So I got to tell you, that's a pretty good endorsement. And it really is an enjoyable read. And so maybe on this Earth Day, that's something you can do for Earth Day. Pick up a copy of Dennis's book, Listen to the Land. Again, it's published by Terrace Books of the University of Wisconsin Press. Well, on this Earth Day, too, we're going to take a look at birds. Dennis and I talked a bit about birds, but we're going to go in some more detail, talk about bird music, the songs and the calls. John Fyth, one of our guests coming up, and Steve Betchkal of Eau Claire, John Fyth of Madison, both have been guests on the show a number of times, and we look forward to their visit today as we talk birds, songs, and calls here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.